8:47. So on the way, Donna Strickland. Where do you know that name, Donna Strickland? Well, I'll just make that easy for you and tell you she's just the third woman ever to win the Nobel Prize in Physics. Birds in Minnesota. Are they getting drunk? Literally drunk. But starting with a story that should be of great concern to all of us. At a meeting in Incheon, the UN's International Panel on Climate Change released a report yesterday detailing just how much it will take to curb global warming. Mark Zastrow, good morning to you.
Good morning, Alex. You're right. This was a major report from the IPCC, International Panel on Climate Change, and it brought together the most recent research since the 2015 Paris Agreement on how to keep the world below 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming, which is the ultimate goal of that treaty. Now, the world has already warmed 1 degree, so we're really talking about how do we prevent that last half degree of warming, and this report paints a pretty dramatic picture of what is required. It says there is no documented historic precedent for something like this. It's not physically impossible, but it may be economically and politically out of reach because it says we'll have to cut our carbon emissions in half within basically 10 years by 2030. And then we would have to achieve complete carbon neutrality, so zero net emissions, by the year 2050. So they estimate that that means over 70% of our energy will have to come from renewable sources by that time, and we'd have to see an almost complete end to coal power. Now, believe it or not, those statistics are actually, in some sense, good news because it actually gives us a bit more time than some scientists had previously thought, but it is definitely a tall order.
Really? So even 10 years?
Yeah.
But the thing is, for a lot of our lifetimes, Mark, we've been told when we were younger, you know, that this would be a problem for our immediate ancestors. You know, children and grandchildren would be the ones really bearing the cost. But when you hear things like 10-year countdowns, it starts to feel very real for everybody.
Yeah, and a lot of the consequences of 1.5 degrees of warming, as outlined in this report, could affect us within our own lifetimes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a time when many countries around the world are actually backsliding on commitments to reducing emissions, including some pretty significant players like the US.
Right.
And perhaps soon Brazil, based on political developments there.
Yes, that's right. Jair Bolsonaro, the far-right presidential candidate, he has criticized the Paris Agreement. But also you have countries like Australia, whose new Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, has essentially abandoned their emissions reductions policies as well, without pulling out of the report, but essentially, you know, de facto walking away from it.
Able to escape the radar a little more than the US, it would seem. Perhaps by coincidence, perhaps not, the Nobel Prize in Economics was awarded on the same day to two US economists who specialized in the economics of fighting climate change.
That's right. It's a nice bit of media synergy. The economics prize went to William Nordhaus of Yale and Paul Romer of New York University. And Nordhaus pioneered the economic models that are now used to determine the cost of carbon. And Romer was key in looking at what government policies can advance technology, what can drive technological advancement, which could be used to fight climate change. And Romer, at the press conference for the Nobel Prize, he wasn't directly commenting on the IPCC report, but he did say quite pertinently that we can absolutely make substantial progress protecting the environment and do it without giving up the chance to sustain growth. So that's the optimistic viewpoint.
But speaking of Nobel Prizes, backing up to last Tuesday when the prize in physics was awarded to three scientists who've been studying tiny lasers. It was an historic occasion because among them was only the third ever woman to receive the prize in its 117-year history.
That's right. Donna Strickland of the University of Waterloo in Canada. And she shared the prize with two others, her collaborator, Gerard Moreau of the École Polytechnique in France, and Arthur Ashkin from Bell Labs in the U.S. And now Strickland and Moreau, they developed techniques to make high-energy laser pulses like the kind that you have in LASIK eye surgery. And Ashkin pioneer techniques that allow you to use the power of light to actually suspend tiny particles or organisms like viruses inside a laser beam. And that technique is called optical tweezers. So both very, very cool, very significant developments. But as you say, Strickland's win particularly significant because she became the first woman to win in 55 years. So 1963, you had Maria Gruppert Meyer, who won for her work on describing the atomic nucleus. Before that, you have to go all the way back to Marie Curie in 1903 for discovering radiation.
And there is a history of women not being included when they're actually part of a team that made a discovery, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right. For instance, you have the astronomer Jocelyn Bell, who discovered pulsars, which are the spinning neutron stars in space that give off radio pulses. Everyone knows, basically, that she should have won a Nobel Prize in 1974, but her male supervisors wound up winning instead. Vera Rubin also probably should have won for discovering dark matter in the universe, but she died before the Nobel Committee got around to choosing her. Of course, they can't be awarded posthumously. And it's not just the Nobels that aren't really doing enough to recognize women in science. It was also pointed out that when Donna Strickland's prize was announced, she didn't even have a Wikipedia page. Of course, her male co-winners did. And so suddenly the Wikipedia community was rushing in to write a page for her. But actually, if you looked at the edit history, someone actually tried to make one for her earlier this year, but it was taken down because she was deemed not qualified for a Wikipedia article.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize they were that strict on it.
Yeah, yeah. They decided that the references were not significant enough because she wasn't being written about enough in the media.
Ah.
So it's not just the Nobels, it's society writ large that isn't doing enough to recognize women in science.
I'd like to do an experiment, set up a few Wikipedia pages, see who's deemed big enough. Let's finish, though. Because there's a story from a small town in Minnesota that went viral last week. According to local police, the town is full of drunk birds. Drunk birds? Like on alcohol?
Yes, yes. Ethanol fermenting in toxic berries. This is a real phenomenon. It's a real police announcement from the town of Gilbert in northern Minnesota. They announced on Facebook that they were receiving several reports of birds that appeared to be under the influence, flying into windows, cars, and acting confused. And the reason that they cited was that an early frost had caused some berries to ferment and the birds were getting tipsy off of them.
Okay, so they weren't going around drinking people's cocktails.
No, no. They were getting drunk off the berries. It's a real phenomenon. It's called fermentation toxicity. And it is something that happens every year. It's believed to kill birds every year. Now, the police chief did clarify the town is not being overrun by these birds. He told the New York Times it has kind of gotten blown out of proportion. It sounds like every bird in our town is hammered, and that's not the case.
It's funny, isn't it? Just because it's alcohol that we enjoy, we're using words like drunk and hammered. I mean, really, they're being poisoned by these berries, but
right.
They're doing something that we identify with.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. I actually saw a video on social media the other day of a fish. It was, whatever fish it was, freshwater fish, quite large, that was up on like a boat and drinking beer.
I didn't see that.
Like, it was being held. It was being supported, and it seemed to be enjoying guzzling down beer. I don't know what the alcohol content was. Maybe it was non-alcoholic. I was torn between horror and amazement.
Yeah, it sounds slightly cruel, doesn't it?
Well, as is often the case, I think, with Facebook and other kinds of social media platforms and some of the shock factor videos that get so many shares. Thank you, Mark Zastrow. Good to have you here.
Great to be here, Alex.